surprise too with this much time left. But going for the lead right now. Manning, touchdown! Sterling Shepard, and they're an extra point away from going on top. Dalton down the middle, too high, and intercepted by Landon Collins.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
Episode 15, NYG Weekly. Ethan Weiss here with you once again. We have a special guest. Before I introduce that guest, you guys know the drill. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So go subscribe to us on iTunes and Audio Boom. If you're listening, chances are you're already subscribed on one or the other. If you're not and you just happen to stumble across this podcast, go subscribe on iTunes and Audio Boom. It really helps the show grow. Give us a 5-star rating and review. Also helps us grow. Let us climb the sports and recreation rankings on iTunes. Go follow us on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN. You can go follow the blog at GothamSN, and you can follow Weiss at NYGDaily. Last but not least, I'd like to introduce our guest. We've had Art Stapleton, we've had Dan Duggan, and now the third guest for the NYG Weekly podcast, Dan Schneier, is a fantasy football writer for Pro Football Focus. He covers the New York Giants for 24/7 Sports, and he's a Wisconsin grad. Go Badgers. Dan, welcome to the show.
What's going on, guys? I'm actually really honored to be here, especially now that I know I'm following up those two acts. Though I didn't get a chance to listen to Dan's podcast, the podcast with Dan, but the one with Art was probably one of my favorite Giants podcasts of the whole year. So hopefully I can do a decent job following that one up.
Love it. Well, I hope so, too. So big shoes to fill. No pressure or anything. So let's get right into it. You guys know I was at the game yesterday, Monday night, prime time. There in the Tims, bringing home the victory for everyone, not to brag. We'll get into that a bit later because we actually had a question about my shoes and my choice of footwear going to sporting events. But awesome win all around. The defense was unbelievable. Let's go around, do what we liked and disliked about the game. Weiss, you haven't said a word yet because I just haven't stopped talking. Let's start with you. What did you like? What did you dislike?
Oh, man. Not a lot of stuff to dislike from yesterday. For me, the biggest takeaway, I think, from that game was the Giant defense. I mean, you know, it's a night and day difference between this year and last year. I mean, you talk about nailing on your big money free agents. Sometimes when you just throw money at the problem, it doesn't always work. But the Giants seems like they really thought this through, and they brought in three guys that have just changed the culture here and brought back that old Giants way. And they did a great job rushing the passer yesterday. You know, they got to Dalton. They did a great job on A.J. Green. I believe they held him under 100 yards. Janoris Jenkins continues to play well. You know, you can check off the weekly Landon Collins interception because seems like he gets those every week. I mean, overall, man, you look at the defense and you see the star talent there. I mean, you see guys that are making plays, and I'm just looking at the box score right now. Dalton was 16 of 29 for 204. He had a touchdown, but he had an interception. If you guys remember, the first play of the game was a 71-yarder to Tyler Eifert, or on the first drive of the game. When you take away that 71-yarder, you know, Dalton throws for under, 130 yards. The big kickoff return that opened up the second half, It led to 3 points. I thought that was big. But the Bengals really never had a drive where they went down the field and scored a touchdown on the Giants. There was either off an interception. They had that big play to Eifert and the kick return. But overall, man, the Giant defense has just exceeded my expectations, to be perfectly honest with you. I didn't think it'd be this good. Offensively, I mean, you know, you still see the same areas where they have to improve on. Obviously, turning the ball over, you can't turn the ball over as much as they did. Ben McAdoo, man, going for it on 4th and 2. There's always one play that's like a turning point play or a signature play that kind of rallies the team. Him going for it on 4th and 2, I think, you know, we could look back on this play, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks down the road and say, you know what, that's probably the play that changed the you know, spark this team. And obviously being able to run the football, 27 rushes of the team, 122 yards with Rashad Jennings. I mean, a guy that's been, you know, criticized a lot by me and others on this podcast. He came in, man. He ran the ball well. And overall, man, it was a great win for the Giants. I told Ethan last week, 6-3 is a lot better than 5-4. So good win for the Giants. They're still in the hunt for the division in the driver's seat for a wild card spot.
All right, Dan, why don't you jump in here a little bit, because I do want to touch on a few things that Weiss brought up. And before, actually, you know what, Dan, before you speak, Weiss, you said, you've been critical of Rashad Jennings as well as some other people on the podcast. I have defended Rashad Jennings more than most. I just want to get that out there. Dan, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, we'll touch on Jennings in a second, but a few of the things that really stood out to me, at least, were, and one of my main criticisms at the beginning of the season with Ben McAdoo was just the overall lack of like preparedness and discipline I thought I saw from the team, and it was just such a shock coming from a Coughlin team for so long, and people, I thought, took that a little bit for granted with Tom Coughlin. But now you look at it, and they've really done an excellent job cutting down on these penalties over the past three games. I saw this on Twitter somewhere today. I'm not exactly sure, so I would love to give credit, but I don't remember. They've cut down to just 3.3 penalties over the past three games, and now over the course of the entire season, they actually have the third fewest penalties per game in the entire NFL, and that's something that's really made a difference, I think, in these wins. And then I really want to give credit to somebody who I've been pretty critical of this year, and not just because of the Pro Football Focus grades, but because of what I see on fit tape, and that's Weston Richburg, and not even for his play. I mean, obviously he made that awesome block at the end to spring the game-winning run for more or less with Rashad Jennings, but really just his job of keeping that offensive line intact. He was dealing with his third guy at left guard, next to him at left guard this game. I mean, they put in Marshall Newhouse. I guess that's considered their sixth best lineman, and he didn't play too bad last night, but this is a guy who admitted after the game that he hadn't played guard since high school. So we're talking about somebody who's stepping into a pretty tough spot, especially since the Bengals like to run a lot of stunts, and they kind of had Atkins go at him a few times. So I want to give credit there to Weston Richburg. And then somebody who Weiss didn't mention but really deserves mention every week, kind of like the Landon Collins thing, and that's Janoris Jenkins. Come on now. I mean, who expected this to happen when they signed him to that massive contract? I'm like, all right, I know what we're getting. We're getting a gambler here who actually, has been pretty good in coverage at times throughout his career, but also has those lapses. But where are the lapses this year? I mean, I haven't really seen any. He got burned on that one play. I think it was by Wallace against the Ravens, Mike Wallace. But aside from that, and maybe a few catches here or there for guys like A.J. Green and not even Dez Bryant, but let's say Dez Bryant, he's been unbelievable. Somebody from Pro Football Focus, Nathan Jonkey, who kind of does the fantasy with me, but he also does now kind of more of the main Pro Football Focus stuff, pointed out that when Jenkins was in coverage on Green, he allowed just 4 receptions for 23 yards on 7 targets. And then obviously he didn't mention this, but the play Jenkins made on that 3rd and goal to stop A.J. Green on that screen pass was awesome. And then just to touch on Jennings a little bit, I think what we saw from Jennings was kind of his ability to do a little bit more of what made him, I don't want to say special, but made him effective at the end of last season, and that's create yards after contact. Aside from that, he doesn't really have too much to offer, at least in my opinion, from a skill set standpoint. But if he's able to do that again, he's able to create those yards after contact, it's going to be key because, again, this Giants offensive line really seemed to only be creating space, at least, and creating room when they put in that extra blocker, when they put in Geddes, or they put in, they move things around with an extra blocking tight end. I remember they had one play, I think, with Adams lined up as kind of an H-back, which I like. So those are probably the main things I liked about the game. And I do actually want to give one more shout-out, at least while we're on it, to Odell Beckham Jr., because he played a season-high 11 snaps in the slot, and he was pretty much wide open, free release on that 21-yarder that he caught over the middle where he made a leaping grab. And I was actually trying to think of 3 things I didn't like about this game for a piece I was doing for 24/7, and I was struggling to do it. I guess we'll say Roger Lewis, right? We have to give him a downer, right? I mean, and that's disappointing. I expected a lot out of Lewis. I'm a big Lewis fan. Like, you look at what he did at Bowling Green, and I guess you can kind of point to maybe the competition level as a negative there, as a knock there, but he was a really good player there. So I just don't know what happened. I mean, even aside from the miscommunications with Eli, there was a drop, and there was just a lot of things I didn't like body language-wise from him. So I think that they made the switch mid-game, not surprised to put King. Tavares King played a lot more snaps, and I think if Cruz remains out, we'll see that going forward, even though obviously McAdoo said today he's going to want to put Cruz back. That Cruz is expected to practice on Thursday. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, there's not too many negatives. I don't know. Do you see it differently there, Ethan?
Honestly, not really. So you guys touched on a lot of things that I also want to touch on. And I'll try to kind of work backwards here. So you just spoke about kind of the three things you didn't like. You stuck Roger Lewis in there. I agree. Step one for Roger Lewis is changing his number. I think he'd look really good in number 12. 82, we all have a little PTSD and associate that with Ruben Randle. We saw a little, you know, wrong routes, stone hands. Maybe change it up a little bit, Roger. You mentioned he had a lot of, he was a very talented player. Bowling Green, he had 1,600 yards, 16 touchdowns his senior year. Obviously, the competition level is something to worry about, but not only that, they run a spread offense there. You know, they're in the MAC, right. A lot of MACtion. All they do is throw the ball, spread offense, five receiver sets. It's crazy. It's madness. I love it. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's a rookie coming in, and he's got to learn Ben McAdoo's system. Not going to be the easiest transition, but he does have talent, no doubt about it. So change the number, shake it off, you'll be fine. The second thing, and maybe this looked different because I was at the game, and maybe it looked way better on TV because I did see some people praising it, and to me it seems like madness. People were praising the offensive line, and to me the offensive line looked like crap. Not just, you know, through the run game, and believe me, I understand that Justin Pugh was out, and that's going to make a huge difference, especially when Brett Jones goes down and you got your third string left guard in there. And someone like Marshall Newhouse, who kudos to him, who I, you know, consistently called Marshall Outhouse all through last year as well as the beginning of this year, who came in, hadn't played guard since high school and, you know, had to fill in. So kudos to him. It's not just the lack of, you know, creating the hole, because Paul Perkins had trouble, you know, finding any space to run, you know, as well. It's also the second level. Even when they found, you know, that initial hole and they would burst through, they'd get clobbered after 3 or 4 yards. So there's no blocking at the second level from what I was able to see from my vantage point. And maybe if I go back and watch the tape, I change my mind a little bit. But it even goes, you know, beyond the running game. Eli looked like he was under duress a lot of the time. He looked uncomfortable. Maybe it was because he kind of felt uncomfortable without Justin Pugh. And then even when Brett Jones left. And not to say that he was totally blameless for the pick that was supposed to go to Roger Lewis, but that's the kind of play where you're rolling out and, you know, your receiver is supposed to be there, and if you're feeling that pressure, that's something you're just going to let go right away. He shouldn't have thrown it. Roger Lewis should have fought back a little bit, but, you know, you could tell he's got, you know, a little happy feet in there, not totally trusting his line. You can't blame him. I know Weiss, we spoke about this, you know, consistently over the past couple weeks. It's like one step forward and then two steps back. So maybe you guys want to comment on the offensive line, but let me go talk about the defense real quick, because that's pretty much where all my likes lay. Janoris Jenkins and Landon Collins. I cannot praise these guys enough. You know, last year, I wrote about this morning. You got Landon Collins. He's a rookie. He's a safety. You have your entire secondary injured, a historically bad defense, worst in the league, and then you're playing him next to Brandon Merriweather. I mean, I couldn't think of a worse scenario for a rookie safety. Now, you got DRC, you got Jenkins, you got Andrew Adams, you got Nat Berhe, you even had Darian Thompson at the very beginning of the season. And I feel bad because, and Weiss, you did this too as well, we basically tried to pigeonhole him into becoming this strong safety linebacker hybrid like a Deion Buchanan. He has blown that expectation out of the water because his coverage skills have improved significantly over this offseason and in the first half of this season. So hats off to Landon Collins, my defensive player of the year. Biased or unbiased, I think he deserves to be in consideration. And then there's Janoris Jenkins, who I predicted to be the most frustrating player to like on this team because he's a gambler. Historically, he's a gambler. He took a lot of chances in St. Louis. I believe the stat was, and you know, I feel bad for not knowing this, I believe it was our guy WB Weiss who tweeted this, that with his 3 seasons with the Rams, he had given up 22 touchdowns, and it's been 10 games with the Giants. He's only given up one, and it was last night to A.J. Green in the red zone. And even then, he had A.J. Green under contain, 4 catches, 27 yards. He was all over him, no yards after the catch, even when he did get the receptions. Unbelievable. You got to love what you're seeing from Jack Rabbit. Those are basically my likes and dislikes. I've been rambling. I'll let anyone else jump in here and comment on whatever I had to say. If you guys want to talk about the offensive line or build on my defensive points, Dan or Wise, feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up, you put it perfectly with the offensive line. It's not like anyone who's making the case that this offensive line is blocking well really is not, or even block well in that last game is not making a good, strong enough case. I mean, if you look at just, I mean, we're not going to say let's go completely by it, but if you look at the Pro Football Focus rankings, the Giants have been consistently in that bottom 12 range for run blocking the entire season. And a lot of that really has to do with the second level blocking, which is something you touched on, which I'm happy you did. And a lot of the reason is because the Giants seriously don't have any players who can block on the edge. Maybe Adams can do it. Obviously, Jerry Reese called him the best blocker he graded in the draft. But again, Adams played just 15 snaps last night. That's not many. I mean, we saw 59 snaps for Will Tye. And as usual, Will Tye graded out unbelievably poorly as a run blocker. That's something I don't even need. We don't need Pro Football Focus to know.
No, I mean, you take an undersized tight end, it's not going to end well.
Yeah. He's an H-back playing tight end, it really feels like to me. So, and again, he played, and he said at the college level, I think I read a quote once from him where he's like, yeah, I wasn't even used as a blocker at all in college. So that's good. But so there's that. And obviously you can't expect guys like John Jerry to make too much, or Marshall Newhouse to make too much of an impact as pulling guards. One, because Jerry's never done it before consistently in his career. And two, because Newhouse is not a left guard. So really, and of course, obviously we've noted, I'm sure you guys have noted, the drop off in play from Weston Richburg, just from an individual standpoint, at least. So again, there's just not really the talent there, in my opinion, at least, to get it done as a run blocking unit this year. So I think it's going to be a lot of the same. But I will say this, I did think they ran a lot better out of the when they weren't in shotgun, when Eli was under center, and that's something I want to see a little bit more of going forward. I know Eli works best out of shotgun overall, but you know, there, you can mix it up there, especially if you can kind of get something going some way with that extra lineman they've been using, because that's, to me, when they've really have found the most success there. And then I just want to touch on something with Collins, and I'm just going to say I'm buying into the Oreo narrative with Landon Collins, because I agree, he was dealt a poor hand last season, obviously playing next to Brandon Merriweather and having Craig Dahl in those disgusting three safety sets is something Giants fans never want to see, and it puts any safety in a tough position. But to me, he just looks a lot quicker this season, and he said he cut out Oreos and all the crap from his diet and he dropped 12 pounds. And you know what? To me, it looks like a faster player out there. That's just what I see. What I'm seeing. He doesn't get to those overthrown balls as a safety. The two interception he had this week and one of the interceptions he had versus the Rams is an example of that. And again, we're looking at a guy who now has 3 sacks, 4 interceptions, I believe. He's putting together a season through the first 9 games from a sacks and interception standpoint that no safety has done since 1996. I saw that stat today, and that was Leroy Butler of the Green Bay Packers, an all-time great. So as far as production goes, everyone said he's just going to be that line of scrimmage downhill attacker when he gets to the NFL, and it looks like they might be wrong because he's making those interceptions, he's making those plays in pass coverage. So I'm really happy with everything you said there, and the only issue for me is that offensive line.
I think the offensive line is not perfect. It's not, you know, far from it. But I think, you know, the first half, I thought, you know, Geno Atkins really went after them, and John Jerry struggled a lot against him. But in the second half, specifically late into that third quarter and the fourth quarter, when the Giants began to establish a running game, you saw better blocking, and you saw Eli kind of have more time. And listen, I've been called the offensive line apologist by many people, but I think what you're seeing is continuity. I think Weston Richburg said it best, is that where the offensive line is a very tight group and they're starting to come together. And that, and it's a good thing you guys brought up Marshall Newhouse. He takes a lot of crap from people. He's kind of like the guy everyone points at, and including myself, whenever there was an issue with the offensive line. But for him to come in and play important snaps for us, including Geddes as well, that's huge. And I think with the Giants, you're not going to expect them to be a good offensive line. But going forward throughout the season, you don't want to see this team take any more step backs. Now, if you want to consider yesterday's game for the offensive line a step back, you know, we can debate that. But I think that if they continue to be able to run the ball and continue to improve in pass protection and give Eli more time, I think, you know, that's what I think we can all agree on, is keeping this team from being a hopeful to more of a serious contender in the NFC.
Sure, I absolutely agree with that. One thing I want to touch on a little bit more is the running game. regarding Jennings Perkins. We've seen Perkins steadily, game by game by game, get more and more of the snap count. Obviously, they still trust Jennings more, especially in the late game scenario. I don't hate it. Here's the thing. When people think about Jennings, I feel like they think of kind of like this big back. You know, he's not very elusive, not very quick. And I feel like somehow that's actually an advantage for him in the pass game. Because I feel like when he's in, I think he's a better pass protector than Perkins is. He's got more experience in that department. And I feel like no defense really expects him to go out there and catch passes. And Dan, like you brought up before, he's very good after contact. So if you get him in the open field, he's going to make guys miss. He's going to shed some tackles. And we saw that once or twice yesterday, not just when he kind of hit the hole late in the fourth quarter when they were trying to run out the clock. But there were one or two screen passes that they ran to him or tried to run to him. And one of them was successful. So I don't know how much that's going to change, whether or not they take Shane Vereen off IR if he's fully healthy. But I have no issue really with Jennings receiving some passing downs.
Yeah, I mean, I think you put it best there. And you know, I don't think you need to think that he's one of the better than Paul Perkins in pass reduction. I actually saw a stat today, again, according to Pro Football Focus. Sorry to bring up so many PFF stats.
No, listen, we're Pro Football Focus fans.
Yeah, okay, good. And he's the only running back left with at least 20 snaps in pass protection who hasn't allowed a single pressure this season.
There we go.
I mean, that's unbelievable. And this is something that's stuck with him his whole career. He's been top 10, top 5 as a pass in pass protection, according to Pro Football Focus's pass block efficiency rating throughout his career. And listen, I am the number one most biased Paul Perkins fan in the history of Giants coverage. I will admit that right away.
That's quite the honor that you're bestowing upon yourself.
I've seen so much Paul Perkins game tape. Like, it's disgusting. I saw every single game from his last season at UCLA, and then like probably four or five from the game before, and I think he's unbelievable. But the one thing in my notes, and this is something that also Pro Football Focus agree with, and a lot of the scouts I've read on their takes on Paul Perkins, one of the things I noticed was just he struggled in pass protection. They didn't really use him a lot in pass protection at UCLA, but when they did, he struggled. And he's a small back. I mean, it's to be expected, especially in his first season in the NFL. So I'm with you. I don't mind them using everybody who I was talking to and everyone I saw on Twitter was like, come on, what the hell are we doing with Jennings for this last drive? But I'm like, listen, it's just what has to be done for this. I get it. Ezekiel Elliott comes in and he plays almost every snap for the Cowboys. And people are like, okay, why can't we see that with a rookie like Perkins or like Wilson in the past? But the thing is, Ezekiel Elliott came into the NFL as probably, at least according to most scouts that I read, the best pass protecting back to enter the NFL in like the last decade.
Yeah, so the stats behind that were ridiculous.
Right. So it's a little bit of a different scenario. You can't just pigeonhole and put guys like Paul Perkins or, you know, any of these guys in that same scenario. So I think I'm with you. I like the split right now. Do I want something a little closer to 50-50? Yes, it was 60-40 last night exactly, with Jennings getting 60% of the snaps. So I personally want something closer to 50-50. But again, that's probably just my bias towards Perkins. But yeah, I'm okay with at least that, a 50-50-ish split.
Yeah, I'm with you guys too. 50-50 would be ideal, but for me, I think you just go with whoever has the hot hand. I don't love it, but it's better. It's better than having a 3-4 running back by committee where you throw in Rainey and you start throwing in Darko and you start having four running backs in the mix. But I think it's safe to say that going forward, it's going to be the Jennings Perkins show, and you know, ideally, you would hope for it to be 50-50, but. You go with the hot hand, and yes, last night, you know, Jennings, late in that fourth quarter, he was the hot hand, and he delivered with two big runs and was able to close out the game. So I'm with you guys on that. I think the running game should be whoever has the hot hand and 50-50, unless otherwise.
Dan, something that you brought up earlier that I do want to touch on, especially considering what yesterday was, you know, the Ring of Honor ceremony. You know, you talked about preparedness and discipline. You know, only taking 3.3 penalties over the past three games. And it's something that I brought up last week. I wrote about it a little bit, and Weiss and I discussed it on the podcast, too. It's kind of just Ben McAdoo as a head coach. He was criticized a lot going into the season and through the first half. I know Weiss and I were responsible for some of that. But at the end of the day, there was never really any doubt in my mind that he was the right choice for the job when, you know, all things considered, who was available and who else was out there that wanted him, Eagles cough. For him to come in here as a rookie head coach, to have to deal with Eric Flowers shoving Jordan Rahn on, to have to deal with Odell Beckham, to have to deal with Josh Brown. And people always touted Tom Coughlin as this sort of disciplinarian, you know, 5 minutes early, this isn't acceptable. If you fumble, you're in the doghouse, whatever, whatever. The Giants took a lot of stupid penalties last year, and we haven't seen that at all recently. So hats off to Ben McAdoo for having his team prepared and ready, not only physically, because they haven't really suffered many, you know, traumatic injuries, knock on wood, but mentally as well. I think that's huge. You know, no dumb penalties, because at the end of the day, it's going to cost this team. And you know, like you mentioned, we haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys too, because I was very, 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 you know, I was criticizing Ben McAdoo through the first, I wouldn't say the first half of the season, but at least the first few games, mostly for the reasons you brought up, the penalties and the turnover, something they actually haven't fixed. But I'm starting to worry at least a little bit, if maybe that's a little bit just on Eli Manning taking a step back. But we can talk about that later, especially because I'm usually the biggest Eli supporter. But I haven't seen the same player in 2014 and 2015 as I've seen this season. But I'd love to hear your guys' take on that. But yeah, I mean, even with this -8 turnover differential, something that is only two teams have a worse turnover differential this season than the Giants. And that's the Jets and Jaguars.
Yeah.
Those are the two teams. And they have a 5-14 record. The Giants are 6-3. So it's like, it's crazy to think about that, how impressive the Giants' record is when you consider how bad they've been turnover ratio-wise. But yeah, aside from that, I really think he's done a great job. And there's a few key things I really like. You guys touched on it earlier with that fourth down call, and that wasn't the first time we saw that. We saw that earlier in the season. We saw it in the Saints game where it didn't work because Larry Donnell dropped an easy pass. And then there was another one earlier in the season. I'm trying to remember. I think it was the Redskins. You guys can correct me wrong if I'm wrong. But he had another fourth down inside the opponent's 10 or 5 where they actually converted. So I think they're kind of two or three in those situations, but someone correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure though. But anyway, yeah, I think I like that he's doing that because I'm a big believer in going for it when you're in the
Dallas game.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There you go. Yep. Perfect. So, and again, and I'm a huge, and that was the one to Cruz, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. So again, I'm a big believer in that for a lot of reasons, mostly because I think it's a big momentum boost to not settle for 3. And also because if you don't get it, at worst, you get your opponent inside the 5 or the 10, preferably the 5. And again, as we talked about with this Giants defense, it's much more likely that that can lead to a punt and you get the ball right back at the 50. So I like that by him. I like that he's making a lot of different changes with the personnel. You saw this week, Roger Lewis was struggling. He didn't really let him work through it. He's like, all right, we got a guy in DeVaris King who's pretty damn good too. We'll sub him in. And obviously, King didn't light up the box score, but he made a really big catch on that third and goal, and he also drew a penalty that was really important. So he played pretty well, I thought. I thought that was the right move. He went back to Eli Apple this week after one bad game. I thought that was the right move. So, I mean, I think he's made a lot of good decisions with the personnel, especially after, you know, having the chance to go into that bye week and really realize that, okay, maybe it's not a great idea to show defenses one look the entire game, and that's all they have to game plan for. So,
you mean running the 11 personnel 99% of the time is not smart?
Yeah, probably not. And So I think I'm with you guys there. I think that he's done a really good job for his first season. The reason I was kind of against it at first was just because I don't love the idea that I see with the NFL. A lot of NFL teams now have kind of taken that flavor of the week, flavor of the month coordinator and trying to make him a head coach, just because I think the actual true head coaches are the ones who have had more success. You really look at it, and it's really a risky move. But you know what? I think it's already proving me wrong on that, and the risk and the reward is already outweighing the risk. I mean, the Giants, like I just said, are 6-3 with a -8 turnover margin. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, truly unbelievable. I want to talk about the play calling really quickly, and then I want to touch on, you know, what you talked about regarding Eli and maybe him taking a step back. When they went for it on fourth down, and then they scored the touchdown, I said it before, and I said I'd eat my words. I didn't agree with the play call. I don't know what you guys thought. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I think it was like in the third quarter, you're down 6. It was, in my opinion, take the 3 points, kick off, and then you still have, you know, a lot of time to go out, either go down the field and get a touchdown, or you're getting within range and then you tie it up with another field goal. So that was a play call that, hey, listen, it worked, so I'm not going to complain. But, you know, I probably would have done it differently, but I'm not an NFL head coach. So Weiss and Dan, what do you guys think about that play call?
I'm with you, man. I was against it. I was like, take the points. I was watching the game, and I was yelling at the TV, take the points. And in my mind, I'm just thinking, man, if we don't convert this, They're going to come after him if it costs them the game. But look, you touch a little bit more on McAdoo. The players buy in. They buy into his aggressive nature. They're buying into that, and you gotta like what you see. He's kept this locker room together. And I spoke on it earlier. I think that fourth and goal play, the fourth and goal call to go for it, I think that's going to be a play. Maybe 5-6 games down the road, 6 weeks down the road, we come back and we say, you know what, maybe that was the play. That was the turning point play. That was the play that really ignited this Giants team that's now on this run, hopefully. But, you know, I absolutely love the play. At the time, I wasn't a fan of going for it, but when you look back on it now, you like the play call. They got the matchup they wanted. And one thing I want to say about Vontaze Burfict, I think he's a really, really talented linebacker. I think he could be one of the best linebackers in the game. He is very fun to watch. But it's really sad that he's really putting himself in a position where he's being labeled as this dirty player, because to me, when I watch him, he's got the strength and the speed. I know I'm going a little off topic here, but, you know, watching him yesterday, I'm like, wow, this guy is really, really good. And back to the point was they got the matchup with Burfict, and they were able to score that touchdown. So, you know, kudos to Mac on that one. He had balls made of steel, because could you imagine if they don't get that conversion? If we were looking back on it and say maybe that could have cost him the game, he would have to face the music of the New York media on that one.
Yeah, and I mean, I can understand where you guys are coming from. I don't think there's really a right or wrong with it. I think it's just a difference in style. I take that more aggressive nature. I think it's a momentum thing. When you just settle for the three, you lose a lot of that momentum. And I think the worst case scenario to me is still not that bad of a scenario when you have a decent defense. It leaves your opponent first and 10 inside the five, and that really puts them in a tough position to move the ball. And if they don't get that first down, you're really getting the ball right back at the 50, or maybe with Bobby Rainey back there closer to your own 40. But and as far as the play call goes, I think it was actually a great play call. John Gruden broke it down, which was he did a better job than I could. But I think anytime, even Burfict, or you put almost any middle linebacker back there besides maybe Luke Kuechly, and you're not going to cover Sterling Shepard over the middle on that route. I really don't think so, especially when they designed the play to take Jennings out into the flat and take out that side of the, you know, the linebacker, the guy responsible for him in man coverage on that side. So yeah, I got to give Ben McAdoo kudos for that play call, because that to me is just an excellent, excellent red zone play call there.
Yeah, it was a great play call. But you know, the thing about Mac, and I want to say one more thing about McAdoo is, I don't think he's getting. I think we give him credit, but what he's able to do with this team, I mean, you talk about it. They're -8 internal differential, and the two teams behind them have coaches that are on hot seats about to get fired, and if you look at their record, but he has this team believing in his message, and it's getting to him. And, you know, Mike Francesa made a good point today. I was listening to him. He said there comes a time when a young coach has his moment where you say he's in control now. This was Ben McAdoo's moment. There was no more of the comparing his style to Coughlin's style. I think he established himself. This is his culture that he's implementing, and the players buy into it. And I think he's a keeper, man. I'm not gonna be honest with you. He wasn't my first choice of hire, but I was definitely wasn't against it. As to say, I was upset that we hired him, but you got to give him props, man. I don't think he's getting enough credit. I think if the Giants can get on a roll, his name should pop up into that conversation for Coach of the Year, in my opinion.
Sure, absolutely, especially if he keeps his team rolling with the upcoming schedule, 6-3, going into a Alshon Jeffrey-less Bears, and then probably one of the worst football teams I've ever watched with the Browns. Before we move on and we take some questions, and you know, I do want to talk about kind of like the NFC East picture. We brought up Eli maybe taking a step back. He hasn't been bad. He just hasn't been as good as he was last year. The only real explanation that I can think of, and Dan, feel free to chime in because I feel like you have kind of a better idea than I do, is the fact that last year, this was a team that was constantly playing from behind, always down, worst defense in the league. And for someone like Eli, who can be the gunslinger, who, you know, if he's down, he's really got nothing to lose. You know, he can take shots down the field, especially with an explosive receiver like Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, you look at Ruben Randall's numbers, dude had like 800 yards and seven touchdowns. So, you know, he can make even the worst receivers look productive, especially when all you got to do is throw, throw, throw. So I do think his stats were somewhat inflated last year due to the fact that the defense was so bad. However, we just still have seen some poor throwing decisions by Eli this season. A little bit of happy feet, not feeling totally comfortable. But if you look at the line last year, you can make the argument that the offensive line was worse last year because it really couldn't have gotten any worse going into this year. So I was just curious what your thoughts were on Eli's performance.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's not a stats thing for me because I'm not going by the stats. For me, it's more of just what I've seen from him as an actual thrower. I just think he's a little, his ball placement's a little off this season. His arm strength's not there. He's bailing on a lot of throws earlier than he used to. So again, you can make the argument that maybe the offensive line is taking a step back. Obviously, it helped last year having Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh playing at all pro levels, which they basically did for the entire season. But at the same time, I just think that there's even been some throws that, you know, he's had good footwork on. You know, the first down throw after the Landon Collins interception, which was a really, really bad play for the Giants. I mean, that's a turning point in that game where they can really put things away. On a first down, you can't give the ball right back. And
let me just step in real quick. I didn't hate the play call. I didn't hate the play call.
No, I think he had a step. I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers puts that ball. I think Matt Stafford puts that ball. There wasn't that much pressure. And Eli Manning is, in 2014 and 2015, Eli Manning hits that throw. He puts it out there. We saw it against the Saints in the Dome. We saw it against the Rams a couple years ago, 2014. So, I mean, he puts that ball on the money in a lot of spots over the past two seasons. And that ball was just very poorly underthrown. Very, very much underthrown. So, again, I just think, to me, I don't know. I wish I could pinpoint what it is because, you know, the arm looks very live on a lot of his throws, but it just seems to be not where it was in 2014 and 2015 to me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Dan. I think for me, with Eli, it's pretty simple, man. At this point, you just take the good with the bad. We sit here, we dissect every throw like that. I mean, he's going to make some good ones, going to make some bad ones. I think that the deep ball, I think, Ethan, you hit it. It was a good play call. You underthrew it. But Dan, you're a fantasy guy. Let me ask you a question for all the people that play fantasy. Is he a keeper, or at this point, if you're a team that's looking for another quarterback, or if, you know, as the buys wind down, some of these quarterbacks are going to be off their bye, what do you do with Eli Manning?
Yeah, I think I wrote about Eli actually a couple of weeks ago for fantasy purposes. As somebody I was going to buy on, this was right before the good stretch, the Giants schedule, as I want to call it. This is not the time to bail on him. You really want to sell him high if you're going to sell him at all. And that's going to be after the Bears and after the Browns games, because, I mean, he has seven touchdowns over his past two games. He had, if you go back to that Ravens game, he had another 403 touchdowns then. Take away that weird Rams game for him, as far as just offense really couldn't get anything going. It was like that last game in the funk for McAdoo when he just kind of threw pretty much the exact same thing as far as personnel and everything goes like that. So to me, you gotta wait to sell Eli Manning if you're going to sell him now. If you look ahead at that Giants schedule, and if you look at your fantasy playoffs, which is usually for most leagues, weeks 14 through 16, the schedule does get a little more difficult for Manning, and then it comes down to, can he be what he was last year, which was kind of like that more of that every week fantasy quarterback. And I think a lot of it comes down to just how well this offensive line can stick together through the rest of the injuries. And we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen with Justin Pugh. We expect him back in another 3 weeks or so. And then as far as the offensive line plays goes on the outside, we expect, you know, some good games, some bad games from Ereck Flowers and Bobby Hart as the tackles. But, you know, I think as far as Eli Manning goes, he's not going to be the guy who carries you through your fantasy playoffs, but I think the Giants offense has gotten things figured out to the point where he's going to be a fine mid-range QB1, kind of like back-end mid-range QB1.
Perfect. All right. What should we do? Let's do the contest winner. As you guys know, we're giving away an authentic JPP jersey. Shout out to our producer, Andrew, for acquiring it. It is Nike. It is authentic. I believe it's an extra large. Not totally sure on that, but hey, free jersey is a free jersey. So let me read out the Twitter handle real quick, and I'm going to do a bootleg drum roll. And the winner of the JPP jersey is Eli SMUT22, loyal listener, always asking us questions. He was chirping me at the game last night saying, I guaranteed a win, I better come through, and I did. But congrats to him. You win the jersey. Let me make sure I'm following you. Slide into my DMs, send me an address, and we'll get this taken care of. Shouts to you for being a loyal listener. We appreciate it. Guys, this is the second one we've done. We gave away a Giants hat. We gave away a Giants jersey. Subscribe. Keep following us. There's going to be more to come. I promise you that. All right. Before we get to all the questions, let's talk about the NFC East and talk about kind of the playoff picture. Obviously, the Giants are, you know, they're competing for the first wild card spot right now. 6-3. They've got a terrible Bears team coming up and an even worse Browns team coming up. Realistically, now, not to say that any of these are look-ahead games because you never want those. You don't want to get surprised. The Giants are going to be 8-3 in 2 weeks. Now, look at the Cowboys' schedule. And the Giants sort of benefit regardless of what happens because, okay, the Cowboys play the Ravens. I have no idea what to make of the Ravens. They are probably the most, just okay team right now because their division is terrible. They're 5-4. You really don't know what to expect. They're just boring, I think. And then after that, the Cowboys play the Redskins. So either way, the Giants are going to benefit somehow. Either the Redskins fall further out of it, or the Redskins somehow beat the Cowboys and help the Giants catch back up for their December 11th matchup. We did get a question on ranking the offenses and defenses in the NFC East, so that might be a good place to start. I think it's no question the Cowboys' best offense between that line, Zeke, Dez, Witten, Dak's not turning the ball over. I think that they are definitely the best offense. I'll give number two to the Giants just because Odell, Shep, Eli, ooh, very explosive. Yes, putting them ahead of the Redskins. I'm just not sold on Kirk Cousins. I don't know why. Dan, I feel like you may disagree with me on that, but coming into this season, he hadn't even defeated a team or a quarterback that was over 500. I know that changed a bit this year, but I think that they are the beneficiary of running into certain teams like the Vikings. You know, unfortunately, the Giants ran into them when they were hot. Redskins ran into them when they were cold. And then Eagles, they got a good defensive line. But at the end of the day, I'm just not sold on Carson Wentz being a guy that can kind of take over and win you a game. So I'll put them at fourth. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you can go first because Ethan is just – that's just blasphemy, his ranking.
All right, well, I'm wondering what you don't like about that ranking because I thought it was pretty close. I mean, I would go – as far as NFC East goes, we've got to give number one to the Cowboys right now. But let me tell you something. I am going to take a hot take here. I think the Cowboys are worse off with Dak Prescott than Tony Romo. You can come at me in my mentions, do whatever the hell you want, because I know Tony Romo took the everyone's praising him today. I can't believe what I'm seeing on Twitter.
That was unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Tony Romo, the greatest human being.
Oh, my God.
Because he said we're going to keep Dak in. It's the right move. Come on. If Eli Manning was – I mean, if a rookie ever got this kind of hot start for Eli Manning but basically didn't do too much, made a couple big throws in key games, and I got to give him credit, of course. Dak's made some great throws. He won the Eagles game. You give him credit for that win. But at the same time, he's shown me a lot of limitations, and I think until that final drive in the Eagles game, Dak wasn't that good in that game, and he could have very well lost that game for that team. So to me, I'm going to give them number one spot, the Cowboys, because I think that really what's the difference there is just they have two unbelievable coordinators working on both sides of the ball. Scott Linehan on the offense has done an excellent job, and then even better job on defense, Rod Marinelli. You look at that Cowboys roster, man. I looked at that thing before the season. I can't even believe that they're making these kind of stops on third downs on defense that they're making. And obviously, it's not every possession because they have very, very little talent on the defensive side of the ball, but they're making enough stops in key spots, and they deserve the title. I think Giants are, to me, a clear number two. I think it was a little close for me with the Eagles, but the win against the Eagles showed me a lot in that game. And I think, like you said, I just don't trust the rookie quarterback, especially in December. And then for me, the Eagles are three. And then last for me is the Redskins. I actually do not. You had a different take for me for Cousins. I'm also not a Cousins believer there. I think that's a lot of scheme, and I think he's got a lot of weapons there in the passing game. And I actually think Jay Gruden deserves a lot more credit than he gets for the way he set for his offense and his play calling. So I'm going to put Redskins 4. That's a team to me that I don't trust them to ever have big wins in December. I know they snuck their way into the playoffs last year and won the NFC East, won a division where Tony Romo wasn't there, and the Giants lost like 5 games in the last 50 seconds. But and obviously Chip Kelly team was tanking, but to me that wasn't as impressive as it looks. So yeah, that's my rankings for the East.
Okay.
Here we go, Weiss. Let's go.
All
right. I understand the Cowboys are 8-1.
Prescott
is what? 14 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and Zeke Elliott, you know, what is he at? Over 1,000. And they got Dez Bryant healthy and Jason Wynn, who runs the same route every time, but he's always open. Listen, you guys are not giving, and maybe it's because I live in this area, but you guys are not giving enough credit to the Washington Redskins. They topped, listen, it's harder said than done, but if you turn Dallas into one-dimensional and say, Dak, you beat us, I don't think he can beat a lot of the good teams in the NFL, including the Giants, if you're able to stop the run or limit the run or contain the run. With the Redskins, on any given Sunday, Kirk Cousins can go out there and throw for 400 yards, or he could turn around and give it to the running back, who now is undrafted free agent guy named Robert Kelly, and he can go for 150. This Redskins team, and the reason why I think they're so dangerous is because they lose DeSean Jackson, in comes Jamison Crowder, who's very underrated, and he's over there making plays. They got Vernon Davis, who they've kind of re-energized his career. Pierre Garçon is having a good year. Their offensive line, look, you talk about the Dallas offensive line, and they're the best offensive line in the NFL. But Washington has a really good offensive line as well. And if you ask me, I'm taking Trent Williams over Tyron Smith any day of the week. I just think Trent Williams is the best left tackle in the NFL. I know he's suspended for 4 games, but to me, Washington has the best offense in the NFL. They're balanced, and they're right below Dallas in terms of yards per game. I think Dallas is 412, but Washington is 407. But I just think that you can't if you stop the run for the Redskins, they can throw the ball and they'll beat you. I'm not so sure if you stop the run for the Cowboys or contain it that, you know, Dak can go out there and throw for 300, 350 and win the game. I think Cousins can. Now, look, I'm not a believer that Cousins is this great quarterback, but he's in a great situation and a great offense, and Jay Gruden deserves some credit for that. So I think the Redskins have the best offense in the NFL right now, if I were to choose right now this season. Second, I give it to the Dallas Cowboys. I think when you look, they're the fifth in yards per game, so I would give it to the Cowboys. I think they are second, right above the Giants, who are third right now. Still, the offensive line is struggling. They're still one-dimensional right now, even though they had a good rushing game. And fourth is the Eagles. Now, I am a believer in Carson Wentz. I think he's going to be a great quarterback in this league. But he just doesn't have enough weapons right now. Their number one weapon for him is Darren Sproles. And, you know, that's not going to work, especially late in the season. They were able to run the ball a little bit. But I just think that the Eagles are fourth right now because they really don't have any good receivers for him. So, to me, it's Washington. And I think you guys need to put some respect to Washington. They can contend. I'm serious. I mean,
all right, look, Birdman.
To me, Washington has the best offense, and they're the most balanced, and they deserve some more credit, man. I think Washington. I give the edge to Washington over the Dallas Cowboys. Everyone seems to gloat, and I want to say one thing about this Tony Romo thing. Okay, and it's really irritating to me. Everyone's making such a big deal about Tony.
Oh, why is
this
coming
is the
hot?
NFL? This is the NFL. This is how it works. Okay, they got a younger. Debatable whether he's better or not, but they're 8-1. It's working. They're going to go. This is how the NFL works. Alex Smith took the 49ers to the NFC Championship game. And if it wasn't for a couple of fumbles, they probably would have been playing in the Super Bowl. He got benched the next year, midseason. I don't know the exact for Colin Kaepernick. I guess they went back to the Super Bowl as well. But this is how it works in the NFL. This is the life of a quarterback in the NFL. And today, I'm just reading so much nonsense coming out of Dallas. Like, Tony Romo sacrificed his, you know, gave a kidney to Dak Prescott. I mean, it is ridiculous. I know. I mean, it's and it's just because it's Dallas and it's just the Cowboys and it's this and that. And Jerry Jones took him to his son's or his nephew's football game and broke him the news like this is some love story. Give me a break. That it's like I don't want to make this about a Dallas Cowboy podcast thing, but it's just ridiculous. Edge Washington, they got the best offense in the division.
All right, well, agree to disagree on that one. I guess Dan and I are on the same side here, but hey, time will tell. I don't see the Redskins winning the division. I think it's going to be between the Giants and the Cowboys. Before we go and rank the defenses real quick, you know, no, I'm going to ask this after. So I'll go ahead and I'll rank the defenses. I think the Giants have the best defense. You know, we basically went over every single reason why earlier in the podcast when gushing over how well they played against the Bengals and the progress of Landon Collins and how well Janoris Jenkins has panned out. I think you got to go Cowboys number two because of Marinelli. You know, he has taken a totally poop roster, which, hey, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but I said that they were going to be, you know, overlooked and a little underrated going into this season. Third, I'll give it to the Redskins. They got Josh Norman. They got a decent pass rush. Fourth, the Eagles. They got a good defensive line, but really not much else going on there. So someone else can step in and agree or disagree with those.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in real quick and first apologize to the listeners because my audio did cut out. And I did not realize the first question was ranking the audiences, I mean the offenses. And unfortunately, Ethan, I'm going to backtrack a little now.
Oh,
I'm going to say that I actually put the Redskins number two as far as just pure offense goes. I thought we were going on total team rankings the rest of the season. My rankings kind of align with it with Weiss's just in the sense that they really got it helps that they hired Bill Callahan, of course, but Brandon Scherff emerged as one of the best guards in the NFL this year. Morgan Moses was really, really good last season, and no one talked about him. Weiss talked enough about Trent Williams. It's really the offensive line there. It's the scheme with Jay Gruden, and it's kind of like the play calling there, which I think are all still a little bit better than the Giants. So as far as offenses go, I'd give them a slight edge. All the other rankings I'm keeping the same. I'm not going to go ahead and put them number one of the Cowboys. Now, just to quickly transition into defense, for number one for me, it's tough for me between the Giants and the Eagles, but I do think the Giants have the edge because of the cornerbacks. The Eagles kind of hid those cornerbacks for a lot of the season behind really what was a dominant pass rush. But now that their pass rush has tailed off a little bit and the Giants' pass rush has picked up a little bit, the Giants to me look like a more complete defense. And throughout the entire season, Giants have been the best run defense. But I'll give the Eagles number two, mostly because of that pass rush, pretty much all because of that pass rush, and because of Rodney McLeod, who the Giants got to know a little bit a week ago when he intercepted Eli Manning. He's been probably the second best safety in the division, one of the best safeties in the NFL this season. Then number three for me, that's tough. I'm going to go Dallas, and just like you mentioned, it's pretty much all on Rod Marinelli there for me. They haven't had to be on the field as much as a lot of these other defenses because of the way that offense has controlled the ball, because of the way, but a lot of it is also, I'm sorry, because of the way they've played on third downs, they've been getting off the field. So number four for me will be the Redskins. What do you got, Weiss?
I'm with you guys. I think the Giants are the best defense, top to bottom. When you look at pass rush, secondary, their secondary is really, really good. When you look at those corners and the way Landon Collins is playing, so I'll give the Giants one. Number two is hard. I was going back and forth while you guys were making your points, but I'm gonna give it to the Dallas Cowboys on this one. I think it's simply because what they're able to do on offense hides a lot of their defensive red flags that they have on defense. And also Rob Marinelli is doing a great job there with the amount of talent that he has. Sean Lee's having a good year. He's healthy. They're getting DeMarcus Lawrence back, so that's able to help the pass rush. So I'll go Cowboys second. Third for me, and this is also tough, but I'm going to go third, is the Philadelphia Eagles. And that's simply because I think they have a very good pass rush, and I like Jim Schwartz a lot. I also like their linebackers as well. The secondary is very, very bad. Not very, very bad, but it's a pretty bad secondary. I like the safeties with McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins. And fourth is the Redskins. I know they went out and they got Josh Norman, and they have Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith, who's starting to pick it up. But you could let those three and four is really a toss-up. If you ask me tomorrow, I'll probably put Washington ahead. But I just think if you can move the football better on Washington, I think Cincinnati was able to move the ball Minnesota at times, who was a really, really bad offense, was able to move the ball and score some points. So I think Washington is fourth, the Eagles at three, Dallas at two, and the Giants at one.
Yep, that works for me. The question that I was leading to with this was that I tweeted out that I thought the Giants were the best matchup for the Dallas Cowboys. I still believe it to be true in the NFC. I mean, Weiss, you said that you thought Seattle was the only other team that was better. I slightly disagree. Dan, do you want to be the deciding factor for this little debate?
Wow, you're saying the whole NFC?
Yep.
No, for me, I'm going to have to give it to Seattle as well. I think what they showed against the Patriots is just kind of what they can do in those big game situations. I'm not saying they're the same kind of consistent team they were in the past. They haven't gotten up for a lot of games this season. A lot of that has to do with the drop-off we've seen from their pass rush. And that's really the key difference, at least for me, and why they're not as elite. But it seems like for those big games, Pete Carroll just gets those guys up. I mean, he's one of the few guys who's been able to make it as a pure players coach in the NFL. And I think those guys really respond to him well in those big games. And it's kind of their whole attitude. They want to show that they're the best. They always feel like, you know, everybody's out to get them and everybody's against them. So I'm going to give number two to the Seahawks. And I'm trying to think if I would give a number three spot to anyone over the Giants. I think the Giants are a better team than the Falcons, especially when push comes to shove and play, if it ever came to playoff time postseason, Matt Ryan versus Eli Manning. I think we all saw what happened during the 2011 Super Bowl run there. And I know it was a long time ago, but I think a lot of the same things hold true with Ryan as far as the postseason goes. It's kind of like it's a complete question mark there. And then as far as Green Bay and Minnesota, two teams that have obviously beaten the Giants this year. One, the Minnesota game was in Monday Night Football in that stadium, and it was raucous there. It was crazy there. It was one of their first night home game. They caught the Vikings at a bad time, like you mentioned earlier, Ethan. And as far as the Packers go, that was a short week rest after the Monday Night Football game in Green Bay, night game. And if Will Tye catches that pass, if Eli puts that pass a little bit more on the money, if Will Tye's 6'4 instead of 6'2, who knows what happens in that game? Because the Giants held the Giants defense held the Packers to 6 points in the second half. So, yep, I'm going to go with Giants number three, but I got to give number two to Seahawks.
I'm picking Seattle because I think Seattle's the best team in the NFC right now. I still take them over Dallas no matter where they played.
I'll get you that, especially if Dak's the quarterback. I'm with you there, actually.
And listen, in order to beat the Cowboys, I know it's easier said than done, but if you can contain the running game and you don't let them get into those second and shorts and move the ball like that, and you make Dak on 3rd and 12 have to make plays, You'll take that. I mean, look, Dak eventually, I think we agree that can be a good quarterback in this league. But right now, outside of a couple plays that he's made, and I know people won't like this, but right now I think he's just managing the game. 4 yards to Beasley, 6 yards to Witten, maybe get a 20-yarder to Dez. I know he had that long one to Dez against the Steelers, but I just think he's doing a good job managing the game, and they're just turning around and giving the ball to Zeke. This is one of the reasons why I think Seattle can beat them, because I think Seattle can stop the run. I think they can get the best of the Dallas offensive line on some plays. And I think offensively, Russell Wilson is a dynamic quarterback, and he usually gets hot this time of year. And, Dan, you said you spoke on the Seahawks. I think they also, in the first half of the season, they were dealing with a lot of injuries, specifically with their quarterback. The offensive line is still a question mark to me, but I think they have the weapons outside. They got the quarterback, and most importantly, they got the defense to go up in there. I was trying to think of a second team to give to give an edge to the Giants, but I don't see it. Possibly, I want to say Detroit, but I don't trust Detroit's defense, so I'll say the Giants second. And third, I'll go with Detroit. I think Detroit's a very underrated team.
I mean, if you look at
Detroit's a good roster, no doubt. I'm sorry to cut you off there, Ethan.
No,
but
all right.
If you want to trust Jim Caldwell in a playoff game, that's on you, Weiss. I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and do that. I think that guy's a terrible head coach, and I think time will tell there. I guess we'll find out. But yeah, I'm not going to get on board just for that reason. I'm sorry to say that, but I do agree with your take on their roster. It's a good roster for sure.
I mean, if you
think Washington could beat them?
I think it's another team that kind of, I mean, I know you may see this differently. It's another team I kind of think has made some questionable coaching decisions with Gruden, not as far as the play calling goes, like I said, in the offense, but just those kind of end of the game, end of the half decisions. Even we saw against the Giants that whole debacle at the end of the half where they couldn't get any points and then JPP had the strip sack. I mean, those are the type of elementary things that you really are going to come, in my opinion, come back to haunt you in a tough, close postseason game. Because again, there's not going to be many of these like blowout type games in the playoffs. A lot of teams, at least as far as the NFC goes, that make it, it's going to be a competitive postseason. I'm really excited for it. I think there's going to be six great teams that get in, or at least six competitive teams.
I think you guys are, you know, when you, I know you guys are saying that Seattle being the, you know, the only other team ahead of the Giants, you know, it's really only one spot. But I feel like if you look at it, you know, what are the Cowboys good at? They're good at running the ball. The Giants, you know, statistically, have a slightly better rushing defense than Seattle. If you look at their secondary, you know, Cam Chancellor hasn't played well this season. Richard Sherman's good, but if you ask me, I think Landon Collins and Janoris Jenkins have been better than that pair. Then you look across, if DRC is healthy, then you got Eli Apple. You know, Andrew Adams hasn't been, you know, terrible this season. If you look on offense, you know, okay, they don't really have a run game. Two bad offensive lines. You can kind of match them evenly there. They can't run the ball. It may, you know, Seattle's offensive running game may be even worse than the Giants. So you got Jimmy Graham. You're Russell Wilson, who gets hot this time of year. But Eli Manning is no slouch, especially when he gets to this time of year and gets into the playoffs. So, you know, I really don't think it's that far-fetched to say that the Giants could be a better matchup than the Seattle Seahawks.
We'll see. Seattle's getting healthy. They're getting Thomas Rawls back. So we got to see. I think you're underrating the Seahawks a little bit. They are a legitimate Super Bowl contending team. I was hoping last week's game would prove that to you, but you're still coming out here not giving them enough credit.
Listen, I'm just saying, I think if you look at the numbers, the Giants aren't, I mean, the Seahawks run defense a little bit worse than the Giants. And I think, you know, whatever. I think the Giants offense can pick it up and can, you know, certainly outscore the Seahawks, especially if the Seahawks don't have a running game. And, you know, it's not just Thomas Rawls. Kristen Michael was finding a little bit of room early on when he first got the starting job, but that line literally can't block for anybody. I mean, if you look past this Patriots game, the week before, they literally ran the ball like six times. So, you know, they're not finding any running room.
They're the worst run-blocking offensive line as a whole on Pro Football Focus this season.
So there you go.
So,
you know, so if you're talking about one-dimensional teams like the Cowboys when it comes to running and, you know, their quarterback doesn't have to make a throw, you know, the Seahawks literally can't run.
I'd still give the edge to Seattle over the Giants.
All right.
Whatever. I think both of them can beat them. I think both. Look, if tomorrow the Giants played the Cowboys this Sunday, I'm picking the Giants. So they play the Seattle and the Cowboys are playing, no matter where, I'm picking the Seahawks. I think there's ways you can beat this Dallas team. I don't think they're unbeatable or they're that much better than the second or third best team in the NFC, who right now are the Seahawks and the Giants. I don't. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I've swayed back to what you were saying before, Weiss, about how I kind of have Seattle number one. I think this Dallas team, while they are improved from that 2014 team that had the Dez catch game, which no one seems to ever like to talk about the fact that Green Bay still had like 2-3 minutes on the clock and Dallas hadn't stopped them in three drives, they probably still would have lost that game, but I digress. But they're a little bit different just because of Byron Jones, I think, and because they've been a lot better in pass coverage this season. And that's something that we didn't see from that year. But to me, I think there's actually a ceiling with Dak, and until they put Romo back in, and I actually think they eventually will, I'm not going to get too scared of that team as far as long-term goals go.
Let me ask you a question right now. Let me read you the Dallas schedule until the Giants game, okay? I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. All right? They got the Ravens at home this Sunday. Then okay. They got the Redskins at home on Thanksgiving. Then they go at Minnesota before the December 11th game against the Giants. They actually played two back-to-back Thursday games. Sunday, December 11th at the Giants, Sunday Night Football. Who's starting, Romo or Dak?
Wow, you have to think the only way possible for I guess Dak to be taken out of that lineup would be if they lose to Ravens and the Vikings in Minnesota, right? You'd have to think that's the only way possible. I mean, one game, they're not going to pull him, right?
No. I think if they lose to the Ravens and they lose to the Redskins on Thanksgiving, I think they'll go to Romo for the Minnesota game.
Oh, you think if they lose to the Redskins? So yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that. Right. So they go back-to-back losses. That's another way to do it. I'll say this: if they lose two of those three in any fashion, I actually think they'll go back to Romo for that game. And if they don't, I think that if Dak doesn't win the Giants, it's over for him.
Wow. Even if he wins the next three?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Assuming that they don't pull, I meant assuming they don't pull him and he loses two of those three and they say, okay, we're going to give him a little bit longer of a leash. And I'm talking Redskins, Ravens, at Vikings. If he somehow manages to lose two of those three and then lose the Giants three of the four, I think that's it. And I think a lot of people don't agree with that. A lot of people are saying, you know, this was it. Like from Romo today, his admission, everything that's gone on, they're going to give Dak the long leash. But I just don't see it happening when it gets closer to the playoff time. It's hard for me to see them thinking that Dak's going to go into Seattle if it comes to that and beat them on the road in the playoffs. That's just hard for me to see.
I can see that.
All right. So we're running on, I think, like an hour here. So let's rattle through a few listener questions before we wrap up. Okay, this one from Mr. Poku. Who do you feel has had a bigger impact so far, Olivier or Landon? Weiss, why don't you start?
Landon has taken a step forward, but Olivier Vernon has been really, really good. It's hard for me to choose, pick and choose. I'll give the slight edge to Landon because he's getting the picks and he leads the team in sacks because I think he's taken a major step forward. That's not to discredit anything OV has done this year.
Dan, what about you?
I'm going to do the exact same thing. And I think it's been unfair a little bit, the criticism Ovi's taken from a lot of Giants fans that, not all Giants fans, there's a lot of knowledgeable Giants fans who understand what's been going on. And I guarantee a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are the ones who understand 100% what Ovi's been able to do this season. But as a whole, I think it's a little bit different, some of the less knowledgeable fans. But it's just so hard to not put Landon Collins there when you consider how historic his season has been so far. I mentioned it earlier, but no safety's done anything like this since 96, at least when it comes to sacks and interceptions. Then you put the whole fact of the matter that he's playing next to the Giants' fourth number four option on the depth chart at safety to start the season, if you consider Mykel Thompson ahead of Andrew Adams, which you should because he was. So when you consider all those factors and the amount of, you know, the small amount of big plays that they've allowed as a defense over the top, I think Collins deserves it. And I think you mentioned it earlier, Ethan, and I'm going to let you talk now on this debate so you can kind of fill me in on why you kind of think this. But I think there's a case to be made for Defensive Player of the Year for Collins.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going with Landon. My case is, and I'm pretty sure this stat was true last week, and I'm assuming it holds true for this week. He's the only player, only defensive player on any team to have four interceptions, three sacks, and lead his team in tackles. You mentioned it hasn't been done since 1996. I think he's in serious consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. Dan, you hit the nail on the head. Not to take anything away from Olivier Vernon, just Landon Collins having an incredible season. And, you know, the work that Olivier Vernon's been doing in the run game is something that shouldn't go understated, because it was one of the things that I harped on when I was one of the first people, not to brag, guys, that said that the Giants needed to go out there and just throw a pile of money at this guy. I wrote about him in, like, March, right after the Super Bowl. I was in love with this guy, what I saw in Miami. His run defense is unbelievable. It has been unbelievable. He's playing with a broken hand. So, you know, not to take away from Olivier, but Landon Collins, my guy, my Defensive Player of the Year, and I think he's had a bigger impact. All right, this one's from Drew. Seeing the D front four shut down Hill or Bernard and finally get a good amount of pressure on the quarterback, do you think they're legit? Yeah, they're legit. I've thought they're legit for the past few weeks. Not that Hill and Geo are any sort of, you know, incredible duo, but the run defense has been there all year. I pointed out when comparing it to Seattle just now, I think ESPN has them ranked fifth. Dan, you can, you know, throw out your Pro Football Focus rankings to see where the Giants defense ranks overall. But they're legit. They're one of the more legit units in the entire NFL.
Yeah, I mean, are we talking from an overall perspective or more of a pass rush perspective?
You could take it from either.
Yeah, overall, I mean, when you consider the impact they've made in the run game, I would agree that with your assessment on where they are as far as the rankings go. As far as just the pass rush goes, I don't know if I'm ready to consider them elite just yet. I thought they played an elite game against the Bengals. I didn't think they played as much of an elite game against the Eagles. I mean, it's not obviously is an easy task against Jason Peters and that crew, Brooks on the inside, guys like that, Kelsey, even though he's having a little bit of a down season. But I still think I need to see a little bit more against those elite pass-blocking offensive teams for me to kind of say, okay, yeah, they're now in that elite category as far as just pure pass rush goes. But overall defensive line, when you factor in the, you know, when you factor in the run defense, yeah, I can give it that.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. They were elite before coming into this game, so to me. So run defense is elite. Pass rush, I'm still iffy about, but yeah, I'm with you guys.
All right. Garrett asks, when did you realize how powerful your Tims were? Also, do they only work when you're at games? Yeah, so they only work when I'm at games. 3-0-1 at Islanders games this season in the Tims. You know, the one's a shootout loss. Can't do much about that. The Islanders are a dumpster fire. Capuano's going to get fired soon. 1-0 at Giants games. I wore my Sperry's to the first Giants game when they lost against the Redskins. So safe to say I can burn those shoes, never wearing them again. And yeah, no, I just realized they were very powerful when the win streak started. I tried doing it when I was at home watching on TV. That only did so much. The Giant, I think it was during an Islanders game, the Islanders started to march back and then they eventually blew it, but no surprise there. So yes, only works at games. Next question. Michael, will our O-line fix itself or will it be a continuous problem? Dan, you want to tackle this one?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this earlier, and I just don't see the offensive line turning around from a run blocking standpoint. You know, maybe they things change a little bit if they get Justin Pugh back, if they start to continue to use Newhouse. Then they can start to use Newhouse again as that extra blocker and those jumbo packages. But to me, it's just they just really just don't have that much talent from a run blocking standpoint on that line. And to me, they've been fine in pass protection. Like Weiss mentioned a little bit earlier, the communication was awesome last night. They were burned multiple times, play after play, it seemed like, by Geno Atkins. And then after halftime, the adjustments were completely made. And I want to give credit to Richburg there. And again, a lot is said about Richburg this year, and he has had a drop off in play, at least according to Pro Football Focus and according to what we can see as fans, obviously. But at the same time, he still does have positive pass blocking grades from PFF. It's really just been the run blocking that he struggled with. So I will say that I think the pass protection will not hinder the Giants, except for obviously maybe, you know, a few plays here or there when they get beat on the edge. But if you're looking for an offensive line to completely turn things around in the second half of the season, I wouldn't put my money on the Giants.
I'm going to slightly disagree. I think the offensive line will continue to take step forwards and not take step back. I think Eric Flowers is starting to be competent at that left tackle position. He still has to work on his technique, but you're starting to see a little bit of he's moving in the right direction. Yesterday he was graded out positive by Pro Football Focus. I think he was the third highest graded offensive player for the Giants, so he played well. It's continuing to take steps forward for me, and I think they will. The running game will improve as the season goes on. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're going to be rushing for 100 yards every game for the rest of the year, but I think it'll be better than what we saw in the first half of the season, yes. As Perkins continues to improve as well.
All right, fair enough. Let's do one more question. This one's from Ryan. At this moment, do you see the Cowboys winning the East, or do you see a late run by the Giants, the Eagles, or Washington? Anyone's feel free to step in and take this one.
You can go first, Dan.
I'm going to be a little sobering with this, but I'm going to say I don't really see it. To me, it's just a matter of the schedule left. The Cowboys, we mentioned that upcoming Vikings game. Again, if that's a week 4 game, a week 5 game, they're going to lose that game in Minnesota. That's the way Minnesota was playing. That's the way they're playing, especially at home. Now it's a different story. Their offensive line is in complete shambles. And they just seem to really have taken a step back on defense. There's been some injuries there that have played a big role there. So to me, that's a big factor. Now that they can scratch that game off the schedule is a difficult one. And again, maybe the Cowboys falter a little bit in those division games with the Redskins and the Eagles that they have remaining on their schedule. That's kind of my only hope there. Maybe the Ravens too, but it just seems like a big task. Even if the Giants do win that second game against Dallas at home, I think they have a really good opportunity to do that. They're still going to be a game behind, and obviously they need only one more to tie the tiebreaker, but the Giants have a couple tough games left on the schedule. Lions, Inc. isn't going to be a joke. Weiss talked about them earlier, and they certainly have a talented roster. And then obviously in Pittsburgh is just not going to be easy. I know the Cowboys did it last week, but you know, this is going to be a team that's going to be even hungrier at that point. Now that they've dropped to 4-5, they're really going to be fighting for that division. So to me, I really don't see it. I mean, I hope you guys can offer maybe a more optimistic take.
Nope, sorry, I don't have a more optimistic take for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Listen, I've been bashing the Cowboys throughout this whole show, but I think they're gonna win the East, even if they can stumble and lose 2 out of 3 or something like that. But they'll be a 12-win team, and at the very least, in my opinion, looking at their schedule, and I think they'll roll into the playoffs or at 12-4 and have either the 1 or the 2nd seed. For the Giants fans, I mean, if you look at the schedule, you got Cleveland and you got Chicago this week, Cleveland next week. You know, we expect them to be 8-3, but after that, at Pittsburgh, the showdown with Dallas, the Lions, who I think are a little underrated, they are a good football team, and then at Philly and at the Redskins. And I think if they can get out of that 10-6 and have a wild card berth, you can draw that up as a big win for the Giants, in my opinion.
All right, that's all I got. You guys have any final words before I send us out?
I want to do one. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dan. Who wins Sunday?
Who wins Sunday? Giants, Bears.
Yes.
Oh man, Giants are going to win this game. I mean,
do they win? Do they win by more than one score?
Right. I think that's the real question. Yep. I think that's a great question because the Giants haven't put together a single game this season that's been one of those commanding games, great on both sides of the ball, offense, defense, or three sides of the ball, offense, defense, special teams, multiple touchdown game. Obviously, we know the stat. They've won all their games by a combined 21 points. But you know what? I think it's happening this Sunday. Thankfully, if it was on the road, I might think a little differently, but it's going to be a little easier at home. I think everything gets put together. I think the Giants win the turnover battle by maybe 2 with Jay Cutler on the other side. And you know, Ethan mentioned, you know, it's an Alshon Jeffery-less game, but it's also a Kyle Long-less game. He's out for the season. Their best offensive lineman by far. So this is a game the Giants should dominate, and I think it's going to be they're playing with a lot more confidence now, and I think it's going to be one they're going to focus on, you know, putting away early. So I think the Giants win by 2 or 3 touchdowns in this one.
Love it.
I'm with you, too. I think the Giants win. I think they win by more than a touchdown. I think you talked about Alshon Jeffery, no Kyle Long, also no Howard, that rookie running back who's played well. I read a report, not a lot of those players in Chicago are really buying into Jay Cutler anymore. So I think this is a game where the Giants are going to take advantage. I know the Browns are winless, and I know this might sound ridiculous, but I think the Browns will be a little bit of a tougher matchup for the Giants than the Bears will.
The Bears
are a disaster. They are a disaster. At least the Browns are going to come out there with Terrell Pryor. If that's
the Browns
one guy,
can even beat the Jets with freaking Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick coming.
Listen, I know, I understand, I get it, and I think they'll beat the Browns too. But I'm more comfortable with the Bears game because they're at home. Okay. The Bears. Who's Jay Cutler throwing the ball to?
That's a good question.
Meredith,
Royal combination of Zach Miller.
You taking any of those guys over Terrell Pryor?
No, but I mean, we've seen Janoris Jenkins shut down Dez Bryant and AJ Green.
I get it, but I just think the Bears are in a really bad situation right now. I mean, if you read up what's going on in Chicago, you guys understand. I just think, and the Browns are winless, and they're at home, and they're trying to get that win and not go 0-16. You know, it's a little bit different. If both those games are at home, I'd say I'm confident more in the winless Browns. But going into Cleveland,
I'm just nervous that the Giants are going to be the one. I really want the Browns to get one before we have to face them.
I'm 100%. I've never been more confident in the game than I am in this game that they'll beat the Bears and they'll beat the Bears down.
Browns, I see it a little differently just because I've seen the Bears do that thing where they can kind of control the game with that zone blocking scheme that they use up front. And I guess the Kyle Long injury is going to make a big difference there, hopefully. But they kind of did that against the Vikings 2 weeks ago. But, you know, I'm not going to be able to be – I'm not the guy who's saying, oh, the Giants are going to be that one. If the Giants don't win that Browns game, I don't care where it is, on the road, at home, wherever, by multiple touchdowns, and we need to stop thinking about them as anything more than a wild card.
Okay. Here's a question. Bears-Browns, you're betting your money. Which game are you 100% positive that they're going to win it? Are you betting it at home versus the Bears or in Cleveland versus the Browns?
I'm personally taking it in Cleveland against the Browns. I think that roster is a atrocious roster. There's nothing good to say about it except for Joe Thomas. They lost Joel Bitonio. They lost their best, their second best, basically, player on that team, unless you want to give it to Terrell Pryor, which is fine. I can do that too. So let's say their third best player. And look at the rest of that roster. That defense is atrocious, man. Like, I can't see the as bad as the Giants offense has been at times this year, not in recent weeks. Obviously, we talked about the 7 touchdowns in the past 2 games, passing touchdowns. As bad as that offense has been at times this season, I can't see even the Browns forcing more than maybe 1 or 2 3 and outs max.
Yeah, I'll give you the defense. The defense is pretty bad. And
really bad.
Do have Vic Fangio, so that's a little bit of a...
There you go. And Leonard Floyd, who has looked pretty damn good in recent weeks.
Damn, I wish we had Leonard Floyd. I like Eli Apple, man, but I wish we had Leonard Floyd.
Me too. Then maybe we wouldn't have to play... the Giants wouldn't have to play Jason Pierre-Paul and Olivier Vernon for 98% of the snaps.
Yeah, ridiculous snaps.
That's going to haunt them.
Hopefully these next 2 games, they actually... use a little bit more rotation and kind of get guys off the field a little bit and kind of get some of these young players' confidence more up on the defensive side of the ball.
I want more Kerry Wynn.
Me too. Like, they got to get him out of this protocol, man.
Yeah, man.
That's going to be important. They got to get him out of the protocol.
All right. That's it. NYG Weekly 15 in the books. Guys, thank you for listening. Subscribe, rate, review. Follow us on Twitter at EthanGSN, at GothamSN, at NYG Daily. And once again, special thanks to our guest, Dan Schneier. You can follow him on Twitter, at Dan Schneier NFL. His Twitter will be...
Thanks for joining, Dan.
Yeah, we really appreciate it for taking the time on a Tuesday evening. His Twitter will be linked in the official post when this goes up in the morning. Dan, any final words?
Yeah, just thanks for having me here. I've been looking forward to doing this for a long time. Like, I found you actually didn't find you guys or this podcast till this summer, which is a shame because I'm sure you guys have been doing some awesome Giants coverage until then. But at this point, you guys have become my favorite followers for the Giants outside of maybe Art Stapleton. And you got to give him a shout out because that guy's the man. But
it's good
company
to be in.
Hell yeah, for sure. So thanks for having me on. And anytime you want to bring back on, I'd love to be on the show. And let's go Giants.
Let's go Giants. We'll definitely have you back.
Make sure you guys follow Dan. If you guys have any fantasy questions, hit Dan up. He'll gladly answer them.
100%. All the time. Always down to answer fantasy questions.
All right. Episode 15 in the books. Peace.